Economists warn that the U.S. will slide further into recession without more stimulus relief from Congress. But even with further financial intervention, it's going to be a long road back to pre-pandemic economic health. Suzanne Althoff, a former Boston Globe magazine editor and assistant professor at Emerson College, says one way out of the recession and towards a more equitable future is to invest in women entrepreneurs. And there's data to back her up. Research from the Association for Corporate Growth in 2015 estimates that if U.S. women launched high-growth firms at the same rate as men, we'd add 15 million jobs in only 2 years. That's just one of the many conclusions drawn in Althoff's newest book, Launching While Female: Smashing the System That Holds Women Entrepreneurs Back. Althoff is here with me now to talk about that work. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Tiziana. Thank you so much for having me.
Great to have you. And let's dive right into the big thing. Why are women entrepreneurs such a big piece of the answer for our economy?
Yes. Well, I think if you stop to think about it, we need full entrepreneurial participation in order to have as many companies as we need, as many jobs as we need, if anyone is sitting on the sidelines who has a great idea that's harmful for all of us.
You know, as I was reading the book, I thought several times, all right, we've heard lots of arguments out there that the market's smart, the market figures it out, it gets us to optimal, it'll get it done. But if we're leaving 15 million jobs on the table in only 2 years, that's a lot of lost economy profitability. Why isn't the market getting it done?
Yeah. I mean, I in the book, I write about the meritocracy myth, right? Exactly what you're saying. We all have this assumption that, oh, the best ideas, the hardest, the people who work the hardest, they get ahead, they will get their companies launched. And it's the research again and again shows, and also reports from the field show that's not the case. There are significant funding disparities, for example, that means some entrepreneurs just simply don't have enough of the money they need to start a company or to grow a company. And part of this is the racial wealth gap in our country. That means that black entrepreneurs start a company with a significantly less money than a white entrepreneur. Or the gender pay gap also means women entrepreneurs start companies with less money in their bank account than a man.
You know, at one point in the book, you compare, this is a 1988 congressional hearing on women entrepreneurs, and then a congressional roundtable in 2008, hosted by then-Senator John Kerry. The problems in those two things, they were the same. There had been very little change in that time. That can be discouraging, but we are also arguably in a new moment. We are post-hashtag MeToo, or at least in the middle of that reckoning. Do you think there's an opportunity for change now that there hasn't been over the decades that women have been experiencing this disadvantage, structural disadvantage and funding disadvantage?
I do, Tiziana. I really do. And I say that for a couple of reasons. First of all, the pandemic has shown all of us that we can't leave any opportunity on the shelf. We need to get serious. And people who have great ideas for businesses need to be supported and funded. I would also say that we're beginning to open our eyes to structural racism and all the ways that has been playing a role in our lives, and it's certainly a part of our business lives. Back to the earliest days of our country, I did research into the ways white supremacy has affected who's opened a business and who has not. So there's a lot of conversations and interest, especially for women of color, who are showing such an expressed interest in entrepreneurship. There's a lot of interest in supporting them finally after, as you say, after decades of talking about it, to actually get real. And I'll just cite one example. There's a nonprofit group called All Raise, which is working to bring more women investors into the venture capital community and also to support more women founders. And they just raised $11 million to really advance their work. So that's promising. So we really need to take advantage of this moment that we're in with the pandemic and discussions about systemic racism and push to make sure it happens. And I will also add the student debt relief conversation that seems to finally be getting serious. That would have a real impact on underrepresented entrepreneurs, because researchers at Northeastern found that people who have student debt are less likely to start a business, or the business, if they do start one, is slower to grow. So if we were to have some targeted student debt relief, that could really increase the number of companies in the country and the number of jobs.
And let's stay in the solution space, and I'll stay on student debt relief with you for a minute. I'm not quite sure how to ask this question, but does life stage matter? So one could provide student debt relief immediately, or one could provide it or mitigate it over time. From what we know about women who launch businesses, found businesses, does life stage matter? Do we need to be supporting women for startups immediately after college? Is it, after several years of work experience? Does it not matter?
That's a wonderful question. There is a lot of research that having a couple of years of work experience matters a lot and really aids your company formation. If you have experience managing a company, being a leader, managing employees, and managing a budget, that is all wonderful experience before you start a company. And that's actually part of the equation why women entrepreneurs can be at a disadvantage, because they often don't have these advancement opportunities in the workplace. And that, in my research also on the glass ceiling, when it came into use in the early 1980s, it was surprising to me to know that the glass ceiling, when people talked about women unable to advance, often what the women did was leave the companies they were working for and start their own business. So to your original question of, is there an ideal age to start a company? No, I think we need to support entrepreneurs at all along the spectrum, and also because so often entrepreneurs experience an unmet need first, personally, and that inspires a company, or they see an unmet need in their community. So this is certainly why it would be important to support older entrepreneurs. And it's yet another reason why it's important to support entrepreneurs of color and women entrepreneurs, because, especially during the pandemic, certain groups are seeing a delivery of education or delivery of healthcare and can come up with really great new business ideas to respond to that.
So let's stay with that for a minute. You talk several times in the book about people getting into the room, and that made me think of the Hamilton song, The Room Where It Happened. And then I come across the story of Arlen Hamilton, a Black woman and the founder of Backstage Capital. Her company invests in companies with underrepresented founders. I'm going to play some sound for you. She talks to Business Insider about what happened when she tried to start her first company.
There was not really anyone there for me to reach out to who could understand me as a person. And if they were there, I just couldn't find them. That's when I learned that if you were anything but a straight white man, you were honestly not even getting into the room.
So in our last couple of minutes, how do we change who gets into the room, and how do we change the rooms themselves?
Yes, we bring a lot more investors to the table. We train them early. We say that investors don't have to have banking experience, for example, or we expand it to more people. We also have lots of hard conversations about why it's important, who runs our companies, and even individually we can make shopping decisions based on who is running the company, who's owning the company. For example, there's a nonprofit called Buy From a Black Woman that has an online directory that can tell people which companies are out there that might sell something that you want to buy. So really thinking about where are my consumer dollars going, and then pushing for subsidized child care and family leave also has been shown to help underrepresented entrepreneurs. It's not one solution, but there's lots of things that can open up the entrepreneurial path. And truly, this benefits all of us. We will have these new jobs, new innovations. This is not just a benefit for the aspiring entrepreneur who's currently outside the room.
So briefly, and we've already talked about student loan debt relief, we have a divided Congress. It's a hard time to get legislation passed. But is there anything else that the U.S. government could do, and we might get agreement on, that would help advance women entrepreneurs and bring some of these 15 million potential jobs to life for us as we seek economic recovery? Just briefly.
Yes. Well, to stay with the student debt relief for a moment, there are a ton of proposals on the table. Some of them are quite narrow in that the people who have student debt relief are only people who are in the process of launching a company, and they have to show, a company being formed, they have to hire X number of employees in order to qualify for the next level of student debt relief. So that's certainly, I think, something where you could find more agreement than the broader student debt relief for everyone. And I do think, to go back to the child care,
we're close to end of time. I think we have to end there. I'm sorry. This distance makes it a little hard to hear each other and get our rhythm. That's Susan Althoff. She wrote Launching While Female, Smashing the System That Holds Women Entrepreneurs Back. Thanks so much.